Thank you. Go ahead, Mayor. Okay, thank you very much. I would like to call to order the City Council meeting of May 2nd, 2017. Our study session will include an update on the SR-520 transit route restructure, and we will also go into an executive session at approximately 7 p.m. to discuss pending litigation, and we'll reconvene at about 7:30. So if we could go around the table and identify ourselves for the record, please.
Jay Arnold.
John Pascal.
Kurt Triplett.
Toby Nixon.
Dave Asher.
Penny Sweet.
And Amy Wallen. Thank you very much. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this is the first detailed discussion we're having about the potential route changes on 520. We're going to leave time at the end for questions and comments and input. There's a series of other meetings coming up, including one that's being hosted by King County Councilmember Claudia Balducci. Well, there'll be more discussion on this, but we're here tonight to hear from King County Metro on sort of how we got here, and then they're looking for your feedback. So to kick us off is Joel Funt, our transportation manager.
Hi, Joel.
Hello. Good evening. So I'm going to start out with a very brief presentation, and then I will hand it off to King County Metro and Sound Transit staff, and they're going to provide you with an update. And then we're going to have, like the city manager said, some time for comments and questions. So I'm joined tonight by Julie Peonies, who's our the project manager for what's referred to as the Link Connections SR-520 project. And then additionally, Juan Aguera, who is the service planner from Sound Transit, is also here. And then Alex Coe, the Link Connections outreach specialist. And then we're waiting for Paul Reubel, who's the One Center City project manager, is also joining us, just running a little bit late. So with that, here's what we're talking about is the SR-520 corridor, and Metro and Sound Transit staff will go into this in a little bit more detail. But of course the SR-520 corridor provides a lot of transit service to a lot of different places on the east side, a lot of service to Kirkland and Redmond, and then some peak routes that extend all the way to Woodinville and then to Issaquah. And then those routes extend across the lake and serve the University District, and some routes go as far up as Green Lake. And then they also serve downtown Seattle and the growing South Lake Union area to a varying degree. And so what we're looking at here is how we can take advantage of the Link Light Rail that goes through here to make this service, the possibility of making that service better for folks. And why we're looking at that is because there's a lot of, as you probably are aware, a lot of big changes going on that it's worth taking a look at. Are there ways that this could improve how transit moves and how transit riders can get to and from Seattle and the U District? And some of those are, of course, the end of bus operations in the downtown Seattle transit tunnel that's necessitated by adding additional light rail vehicles, especially as Link Light Rail extends further north. The demolition of the SR-99 viaduct, the First Avenue streetcar construction. Then the Seattle Convention Center will expand on to the Convention Center Place Station, which is the northern end of the downtown Seattle transit tunnel, and at that point you can't get in anymore. Ongoing 520 construction, and more broadly than really Seattle downtown development, but there's development going on all over the place, and it's impacting, it's resulting in growth, and it's impacting transit operations and how those things are happening. From staff's perspective, there are some real opportunities here. There's from the use of Link, this idea of improving travel times and improved reliability. That's something that, you know, Link, once you get on it, it's 8 minutes from the UW station to Westlake Center, regardless of how plugged up Stewart Street is or I-5 or any of those things. It's very consistent. And then that benefit actually gets more the further south and downtown you go. Actually, if you're looking at the International District, if you've ever ridden the 255 to as far as the International District, it probably takes as long to get from downtown Kirkland to the REI as it takes to get from REI to the International District. You know, it can be challenging. But and then additionally, the improved connections that could be realized on between the east side and the UW and the northeast Seattle area. The other benefit of using Link Light Rail is that we would be using a lot less service hours to drive around in downtown Seattle, and that there's the potential that those hours could be reallocated to the east side, or there's also the possibility that you could improve service to the South Lake Union area with these transit routes. So those are some of the opportunities, and then also the idea of more midday and weekend service. There are some potential downsides that it would necessitate a transfer, which for some people is a big deal. Other people are pretty used to that, but it's more about beyond just the transfer itself. It's like how that would occur and how would you get from the triangle there at Montlake to the platform at the UW station, which I think is one of the big big concerns that we'll be looking at addressing. And then the other real downside is the trade-off of the what we do know, which is, you know, what travel times and reliability are like on I-5. Between that and the travel times and the reliability of, you know, Montlake and that connection between 520 and the UW station, which is what I think we'll be learning a lot more about. So I think that I just wanted to offer up some of that perspective to start out with. And now I'm going to hand it off to Juan Higuera to talk about, to give you a little bit more detail about what Metro and Sound Transit have been up to.
Thank you, Joel. So as Joel mentioned, I'm Juan Higuera. I'm with Sound Transit. I work in the Service Planning Department and Operations, and with me is Julie Peone, who is works for King County as a service planner. I don't know what the department is, but so we're going to be giving you a brief overview of the project and getting your feedback. So Sound Transit and King County Metro started in March of this year a joint process to gather feedback from riders on the 520 corridor on how service works and what improvements could be made, while at the same time talking to them about potential integration with light rail at the University of Washington station. So the feedback that we're getting from the customers will help shape the service alternatives that are going to come out in June. So in today's presentation, we're going to give you a brief project overview, project objectives and context, a timeline of the project, some summary of what we heard in phase one, which wrapped up a couple weeks ago, and some key considerations as we integrate 520 service into light rail at the Montlake Triangle, and some next steps as well. So we've identified several objectives to improve service and what we want to get out of this project. So there's a few listed on your slide here. The main one is improving service to east side communities. That's at the forefront of this process, as well as to UW and to the west side of the lake. Identifying opportunities for better bus rail integration of the Montlake Triangle, exploring service solutions that keep people moving through the growing congestion, both on this side of the lake and on the west side, and also proactively engaging stakeholders and riders throughout this whole process.
And part of the context of our project, we wanted to outline three major things: the U-Link connections, which happened a couple years ago, the Metro Long Range Plan, and the near-term transportation challenges. So basically, the U-Link connections, some of the concepts that we're actually considering were based out of the U-Link process. The U-Link process was a three-phase public outreach process, trying to get input on when the University of Washington station first opened and connecting communities to that link light rail. In phase two, we did go out to the stakeholders and riders on the east side and asked for their input on those connections. But because most of the focus was on northeast Seattle, we didn't do a comprehensive public outreach process. So that's why we're coming back this year to do, again, a three-phase public outreach process specifically for the routes on the 520 corridor to find out the public interest in connecting the buses to Link Light Rail. And as a result, and after the implementation of the U-Link connections, we have seen an increase in overall transit ridership in that corridor. So we do think that that was a positive experience. And along with the increase in ridership, we have also seen through our surveys customer satisfaction with that connection and those new service. The second context for our Links Connection project on 520 is the Metro Long Range Plan. So again, that was a development process where we reached out to the riders and stakeholders to find out what they thought about their priorities for our long-range vision for public transportation in King County. And the plan lays out a 25-year vision for Metro and includes service networks for 2025 and 2040, along with investments to make our service fast, reliable, safe, and comfortable for riders. So we're working together with Sound Transit to identify opportunities to connect bus service to fast, reliable, light rail as new extensions open. So this restructure process is the first restructure process under our new Metro Connects. And in Metro Connects, the service network of 2025 looks different than it does today. So all of the processes that go into create that network require a public process and approval by King County Council. So that's what we're doing today to get stakeholder input and go through the public process. And then lastly, the near-term transportation challenges. Joel referred to many of the challenges. Paul will speak to the One Center City challenges. But there are major changes coming to the region that are going to impact the transportation network, and specifically going in and through Seattle. So now we're trying to plan ahead to anticipate these changes and to keep riders moving through the region. So Joel gave a great overview of the area that we're talking about. Here on the slide are the 12 routes that we're considering and working with. Six are Metro routes, six are Sound Transit. They include a mix of peak and all-day routes. And these routes, the peak routes go from the east side oriented to downtown Seattle and from Seattle going to the east side, so both directions. And so this project's looking at how we can best integrate bus service on the 520 corridor with Link Light Rail and connection with the University of Washington Station. Our goals are to improve the service to and from the east side communities and providing a more reliable trip for transit riders on the corridor. And also, if the routes do connect with Link Light Rail, all those saved resources, instead of going downtown, we are looking at investing those back into the corridor for the east side communities and on those routes. And our project timeline. So we're still early in the process. We just got started. We just finished our first phase of public outreach, as Juan had mentioned. And so we're still early on and evaluating our surveys, evaluating all the public impact input that we received and kind of developing service concepts from that feedback. And so basically, we are in the middle of March and April, which is the first phase, and June will begin our second phase of outreach. And so basically, we're taking what we heard from the public and trying to develop concepts based on some of the things, span of service, weekend, improving the ride. So we're going to come out to the public for a full month in June and provide service concepts that people can give input on and feedback. And then we have further refinement of those process, those developments. And in the fall, we're going to go out to the public again for a third time to refine the service concepts and get additional public feedback. And then that will help shape what we present to Sound Transit Board and also for King County Council next year. If what we come up with is approved, then the earliest that this would be adopted would be next September 2018. This would be contingent on the buses coming out of the tunnel, because that's really the trigger for us that would create this impact of slowing down traffic in Seattle and on the streets. And we feel we're asking the public to consider if using the Link Light Rail that would be more reliable through Seattle is something that would is something they're willing to do.
So as Julie mentioned, we just finished our first phase of public input, where we asked riders about the current transit service, reorienting service to Link Light Rail at the University of Washington, and also potential service and new connections to South Lake Union. So in the first phase, we rode service back and forth across the lake. We handed out about 4,000 rack cards or information flyers to customers, both on the buses and at transit centers, including at South Kirkland. We were all over the east side, both in Kirkland, in Redmond, and Overlake. In the online survey that we did, we got over 2,000 responses. And following some of the initial feedback that we saw and some of the data analysis that we've gone through, we saw the need for a more targeted survey in the north downtown area and sort of South Lake Union Market to identify where those riders are coming from and going to potentially mitigate any impacts to those customers. As we consider integration, bus rail integration at a UDEF station, there's three key things that we definitely are keeping in mind that we hear from customers a lot. And the first one is, will there be enough capacity on Link now that you've seen all the ridership surges? How will the transfer environment and what are the transfer improvements on Montlink, how are those going to work? And how is the WASDA Rest of the West project going to impact my commute? So we're definitely... as we move forward along the process, we're keeping those in mind. In terms of Link Light Rail, when buses come out of the tunnel, the travel times and the reliability of Link will improve through the downtown transit tunnel. Right now, through the joint operations of buses and rail, it takes about 10 to 12 minutes between International District and all the way to Westlake. With the buses coming out, it would go down a few minutes and improve their reliability as well. In terms of the transfer environment and improvements around the University of Washington station, we're working closely with the University of Washington, with King County Metro, WASDOT, and SDOT on all the possible improvements that can be made. And we're going through that process. And and later on this year, we're going to be telling the customers exactly how that's going to work. For the WASDOT Rest of the West, we're definitely coordinating with WASDOT on the impacts of their construction. And there are different phases of the project and how that impacts buses coming in and out of Montlake.
So our next steps, again, I said we're analyzing the public feedback that we received, and that's going to help shape our service concepts that we're going to take out to the public in June. So in June, we'll start our second phase of outreach. Again, we'll be doing a survey, street teams, transit centers on board the buses, and also public events. We have started our sounding board. We have 22 members from the public, from all different communities. We have, I think, 6 members from Kirkland, 6 members from Redmond. We have a member from Bothell, Woodinville, Medina, Bellevue, and 5 members from Seattle. So we have a good cross-section of people going back and forth and representing various employers and different times of day that people use the service. And we just had our first meeting last Thursday, and our second meeting is this Thursday at Kirkland City Hall. And those are from 6 to 8 o'clock. And then our interagency meetings, we're going to start with stakeholders from the jurisdictions on the east side with major employers, including University of Washington. And we'll have our first meeting May 23rd, I believe. Let's see. And then finally, as Juan said, we are working with University of Washington, Sound Transit, Seattle Department of Transportation, Washington State Department of Transportation to look at improvements. We have a technical team to look at improvements on the capacity levels and of connecting the buses to the Link Light Rail at the University of Washington Link Station. So that concludes our presentation. I really appreciate the opportunity to share this information with you, and we welcome any questions, but first we might want to actually have Paul give a presentation about the One Center City.
Thank you, Julie and Juan.
Thank you.
Welcome, Paul.
Hi.
Thanks. I'm not sure. Might be up here.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you so much for having me here today to talk a little bit about the One Center City planning process that we are going through as a joint effort between King County, the Seattle Department of Transportation, Sound Transit, and the Downtown Seattle Association. I passed out just a one-page handout that briefly describes the project, gives you an overview of the timeline and some of the near-term strategies that we're considering to address congestion in the downtown area. I want to first briefly give a little bit of context for the project. It is a planning process that will create a 20-year vision for how the region moves through, connects to, and experiences the Center City. The Center City neighborhoods are shown on the map on your handout, and that's the 10 most dense areas of the city. And really represents an area that the entire region moves through and connects to on a daily basis. Almost 250,000 trips are made through the Center City every day. And so while it is a distinct area, it's an area that has a regional impact with a lot of different interests having to be accommodated. The city's growing extremely fast, as you all know. The Center City itself is expected to gain 25,000 more households in the next 25 years and over 55,000 new jobs. And while that's happening, there is no new capacity to the roadway network in the downtown area. And so we need to find ways to accommodate all of that growth in ways other than people driving alone to get to and through this area. So that's really the impetus of this project, looking ahead to the future and planning for the next 20 years. But in the near term, we have some very real challenges ahead of us. Julie talked about the tunnel closure, the closure of bus operations in the tunnel that will bring those buses that currently operate onto surface streets. That totals about 70 buses an hour in the peak hour and impacts about 15,000 people who catch a bus within the downtown Seattle tunnel in the afternoon peak period. If you can imagine those buses coming up onto the surface, that would create additional congestion through the downtown area overall. In addition to that impact, to traffic flow, those 15,000 people, additional people on city streets, will affect pedestrian conditions as well. While all that's happening, there's an incredible amount of growth, new jobs and households coming into the area, major changes to the regional transportation system that are will affect traffic levels across all of the network. And so that's why the agencies are working together cooperatively to address this situation. On the back side of your handout, there is a timeline that describes where we are in the process. We are just at the point where our agency executives are ready to issue recommendations about what strategies, near-term strategies, we might employ to address the issues that we've just talked about. And through 2017 and into 2018, we'll be developing that 20-year vision that I talked about at the outset. Some of the strategies that the agencies have been looking at to address congestion include surface street operations, that is how the streets operate through the downtown area, looking at things like signal operations and other capacity increases for transit that might add transit lanes, for instance, in the downtown area. We're looking at transit service restructuring options. One of them is the 520 restructure process, but there are three others that are part of the Tier 1 recommendations that will be moved forward through their full public processes over the next year. We're looking at pedestrian and public realm improvements, improvements to the sidewalks to make transit areas easier for people to make their connections. And that would include areas in the downtown area, International District and Westlake in particular, but also the pedestrian connections up at the Montlake Triangle. The Center City Bicycle Network implementation is something that this project is hoping to further as well. The project wants to achieve a balance of improvements that improve movement for people who are choosing any mode of travel, and that would include walking, bicycling, carpooling, the whole range of alternatives. And finally, we're looking at programs and management strategies. These are travel demand management programs that are largely in place today, but we're looking at ways that we can increase their presence and their value to the customers. That's a very quick overview. I'd be happy to take some questions along with the rest of the team on the 520 process.
Great. We really appreciate all of you being here. Thank you. I know I have a question from Ms. Sweet for someone.
Yeah, for someone. I think it's for you, Julie. When we're talking about, I'm not understanding exactly if we're talking about the buses getting or driving into the station.
Yeah, so the, we're talking about connecting the buses. So they'd get off 520, take a right on Montlake, and the Link Light Rail is right near the Husky Stadium. Yeah. So we are talking about then having the passengers on the bus get off the bus, and then we don't have the current transfer environment is they would get off on Pacific and then walk to the Link Light Rail station. But as we said, we're looking at improvements to try to get the walking reduced, trying to get a better transfer environment for the customers, but we don't have any final decisions yet.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold and Mr. Asher.
Okay, another follow-up for Julie. So on transfer improvements, the way that you're describing it, I'm not sure that improvements capture exactly what's needed here. Because when you take a look at the westbound trip, it is a pretty straightforward. You get off at UW and you head down to the light rail. And I'm a Seattle commuter. There have been times when the 540, which goes to UW, and the 255 have pulled up to South Kirkland at the same time. And I took the 540, took light rail in, and beat the 255 into the transit tunnel to the University Street Station. So it could be an improvement. The other way, though, is a real issue. And the concept of transit improvements doesn't cover how you get the 13 routes that cover this corridor, how you get them going the other way. Because for transit riders, you're coming off the light rail, and then you're waiting for your bus. And right now that intersection at Pacific and Montlake for the bus traffic's there is congested at peak times too. And then you're talking about adding 13 new routes that have every 10-minute service at peak. And I just don't see how it happens without something very drastic that's not just improvements that say, how do you deal with the crossing time and the shelter area? You're talking about a real increase in capacity of dealing with that bus service. Mm-hmm. And so I guess my question is there really talk not just about improvements on what's existing there, but saying there's new capacity for bus transfer areas? Because I don't see any way you add those additional bus service within that current triangle.
Yes, so we understand that in order to make this work for the customer, that when they come from downtown and get off the link light rail and then go to wait for their bus, that the only way this is going to work is if we add frequency. So that's definitely something that we have to do, or we know this is not going to work. So there's a frequency that the link light rail is going to be more frequent in the tunnel and running, and our buses with the saved resources will be able to do that, and that's our intention. Along with the improvements, we're talking about real-time information about when the buses would be coming. We're also talking about off-board payment, so trying to speed up the boarding process to make that process quicker. So we're looking at everything to – we have a technical team that's looking at the capacity issues, trying to manage and that's what they – that's a lot of the service planners, that's what they do, is to be able to manage the capacity in that area. Also, part of the existing – at the triangle, there's a couple different stops. We're also looking at, if we need more capacity, activating other stops. So maybe having a couple different stops, not all of the buses going to one stop in that area. So we'd have a couple different stops for buses going – our buses from 520 and then other buses that are going in and through the area.
And is any additional space at UW parking lot being looked at, possibly taking advantage of?
Well, we did look at a couple different options, and we have about three or four that we're looking at with the UW and with all of our partners.
If I can add a couple words on that. Julie did a great job at explaining the various components of the improvements that we're looking at down at the Triangle. We do have a technical team supported with consultant resources and a multi-agency effort that's looking at this that includes the University of Washington. We'd be happy to come back to the group and give you a lot more detail about how that is shaping up. We're just in the this is a pre-planning process right now. We had about 20 alternatives that we've winnowed down to about four at this point. And we're doing additional traffic analysis at this point to understand what the impacts of having those buses that might be dwelling there for a longer period of time, how that's affecting overall traffic movements. The things that Julie talked about, like off-board fare collection, is something that would speed boarding to allow people to get on the buses quickly. Some of the options for new bus stops would be located as proximal as possible to the pedestrian connections that are there, either on street or the overpass that connects to the link light rail system. So really looking holistically at the variety of different tools that we might be able to improve not only traffic flow but the pedestrian condition.
Thank you. We have Mr. Asher, then Mr. Pascal.
Thank you. Is this captured in Transportation 2040?
Is what captured?
All of whatever this is.
These
changes.
The service network, the service network for 2040 doesn't show buses going from Montlake to I-5.
And one center city concept is already in Transportation 2040.
No, because it's a planning process right now. We don't have actual improvements that we're.
Sorry, Paul. Could I ask you to go to the microphone so we can capture this for all of our viewers at home?
Sure. I'm sorry about that. The One Center City is a planning process. We don't have recommendations quite yet, and so we aren't included within T2040 at this point.
Okay. And what's driving the timing? One critical piece is the Convention Place station. Has King County acted on that?
We have not.
Has it come before the tree committee yet?
It has. This One Center City process project has been presented to tree last month in April, and the whole convention center sale process has been before tree a number of times. In addition, we've presented to the regional transportation committee with both of the projects.
And has any decision been made in the tree committee on the sale of the Convention Place station?
No, it has not.
Okay.
Can you remind us what the tree committee is, Mr. Usher?
It's the Transportation Resources. It's the King County Committee.
Transportation
that,
Environment.
That deals with transportation.
Thank
transportation,
you.
Economy, and Environment.
That too.
Thank you.
But the Lent, it, what you put up in, I think, the second slide that maybe that Joel had, was a combination of a lot of things that are going on, but in this discussion, they are assumed as fixed, but in the regional discussion, they're not fixed. And one of the concerns that I have is we're adding in a significant major element, and that has to do with the when we're bringing the convention place station out of service, in the midst of a whole bunch of other things that are driving gridlock in the One Center City. And I think that that is that decision hasn't been made yet. And I understand at your level it's been given to you, but I think at the regional level we need to look at can time give us some other options in that. The impact on the transit riders, I'm concerned. How many people go across the 520 bridge in transit on a daily basis?
In our project with all of these routes, we have about
today
24,000 okay. trips.
24,000 travelers.
Yep.
12,000 travelers. Mm-hmm. And how about in Sound Transit?
That's combined.
That's combined. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we've got 2,000 cards. That's a fair amount. It'd be interesting to see what's coming out of that. I know that when we had the outreach for the city of Kirkland, there were two meetings, not well advertised, and there were 9 people at one of the meetings. And I understand the other meeting had about 9. So I don't think that we've had a significant amount of opportunity for the riders in Kirkland to provide input. Juan mentioned that something's going to be reflected in the service change in June. This June?
No, the earliest any of these changes would happen would be next September 2018. And as I said, also, we are the 520 links project is contingent on the buses coming out. So if the buses, if, you know, all of this gets delayed, then the idea of connecting the 520 buses on the corridor would be, then be delayed.
Now, I understand. I just haven't seen the that this is an improvement. It's advertised as an improvement. I'm not sure entirely what's driving it or who's in charge. but I see pieces of it, and that's what worries me, that it's not a coherent plan that takes not only the one center city, but takes the Puget Sound region into account. And that is a major concern of mine. I look forward to getting some more answers, and I'm concerned that we have a timeline that similar to Sound Transit 3, there's not enough time to do it right, but there'll be time to have recriminations afterwards, and that's I think we can do better than that in an area that pretty much takes pride in the planning that we do. This doesn't seem to me to rise to that level of esteem. Thank you.
I'm hoping this is just the start of a long conversation. Mr. Pascal.
I have some more questions, actually. I think I want to build off some of the items that my colleagues were talking about. So, you know, we know and we all recognize that these big changes are coming, kind of the perfect storm of all these different construction activities that are going to, you have to play into the solutions that we look at to make this work. So are we thinking about this in a way where we're not just thinking about this as kind of final changes? We're also thinking about some interim things that we can do while these projects are being finished, but whatever we're doing then might not be the final kind of setup of the route change or the investments that we make around the UW station. Meaning, I want to make sure that we're also kind of thinking about some potential temporary solutions that kind of ease the pain while these things are going on. Are you thinking about it that way too?
So I could speak to the link connections and what we're looking at. I mean, everything is on the table. So we're going out to the public. We're going to explain what we understand the conditions are going to be in 2019 when the buses come out of the tunnel, which is the main trigger for us, because it'll slow down traffic for our buses, slow down traffic for commuters, and travel in the Seattle area. We're looking at everything. So we're looking at asking the public to connect all of the buses to the University of Link Light Rail Station, connect some of them, okay, to make, you know, to see what works for them. So we have on this corridor, we, you know, have a couple different buses, you know, starting from Woodinville to Bothell, coming through Kirkland. And looking at what we heard from the public in our first phase, which was they wanted more frequency, span of service, more service on the weekends. So we're trying to kind of incorporate that into a couple different options for them to weigh in on. And we do hope to do, we had great participation in our survey for phase one. We had almost 2,000 people respond to our survey. But we think that in phase two, when we go out with specific concepts, we're going to get more public engagement at our town halls. And so we just hope to increase those numbers, not only on the survey, but also meeting with the public.
So, and then following up on Councilmember Arnold's question about think what he was getting at was, are there capital investments that are coming along with this? Is it, you know, it's not just a service kind of change. Are there actual capital dollars that are being spent, particularly around the transfer environment? And I think what he was talking about is getting buses from 520 to the UW station. I mean, so is that all on the table? I mean, is there actual money available to do some significant capital things?
Absolutely. The One Center City process also includes capital dollars, not only for the downtown area, but for the Montlake Triangle. The 2017-18 King County budget includes a line item for that. It's expected that the three primary agencies, SDOT, Sound Transit, and King County, would share in the final cost of the improvements.
Okay,
and the goal is to have these improvements in place at the time of the implementation of the service change.
Okay, Yeah, that helps me kind of visualize that it's not just a service enhancement, or you know, it's also the capital. And then finally, you talked a lot about coming back with kind of how this would look and options and stuff. Is that it's not just going to be all like qualitative kind of descriptions? I mean, you'll have some quantitative information to say, hey, you know, travel time might be impacted by, you know, X percent under this option and so forth, so that we actually kind of see mm-hmm. more detail.
Yeah, we will have a travel analysis as far as the conditions for 2019 and also the travel times for people coming on the corridor and what it would look like if they transferred with to the link or if they stayed on the bus through into okay. downtown.
That's good. I mean that's something that I think that you know, I need as someone who, when people ask me questions about this, how does this improve or make worse the situation? I want to be able to tell them.
Sure.
You know, this is what it might look like, might feel like. So that's going to be really important. Thank you,
Mr. Arnold and Mr. Asher.
Okay. I heard a couple of things that sounded interesting. One is that, as you're answering different people's questions, talking about some of the service improvements like the off-board fare payment, would that mean that some of these routes may turn into rapid ride routes in this time frame?
So the 255 is not going to be a rapid ride, but we would use that technology so we could speed up boarding in the triangle route. Okay.
And then for the transfer improvements in the capital projects that Mr. Pascal had alluded to, is there the possibility of improvements outside the locations that you're talking about? For example, if the you're talking about frequency, if the 255 were to increase frequency, there are some particular bottlenecks in Kirkland where we've identified some capital improvements that could improve performance. Would this project include some of that, those capital improvements that could happen outside the UW and outside the city center city?
I believe that those questions were asked previously, and so basically we could partner with you, and we definitely could look at speed improvements and to move the 255 quicker. So looking at what would be best for that, we can look at that.
Okay. I think we have some specific projects that we're looking at mm-hmm. separately that might be interesting.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Thank you, Mr. Asher.
Thank you. One of the key restrictions in this for people coming and going to Kirkland is the Montlake cut. When is the second Basquiat Bridge in ST3? 2020 what?
Sorry, I need some clarity.
There's a second Montlake Bridge in ST3.
That's not tied to ST3.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So maybe that's tied to SR 520 improvement. When is that bridge going in?
I don't know the timeline on that. It's not proposes to affect these changes. We'll have to weigh in that with like the 2023 timeline and what that does for creating relief in some of these cases. Like in 2021, we'll see less buses coming downtown. In 2023, we'll open to Linwood and to the east side. So we'll see some relief in those times. So we certainly don't want those things to overlap with construction occurring there as well and having an increase in ridership in that location.
So it's very long term before we see the Montlake congestion relieved at any level, and there's no capability of putting a bus only lane in there.
We're looking at the bus improvements that could be made in that area, so there could be some dedicated bus lanes improved accessing the area across the Montlake Bridge. I don't know if it would specifically be on the bridge, but we may be getting closer to it or providing queue jumps that get buses out in front of that traffic. Some of that exists today, but we may have to look at both directions in order to accomplish that. And really, it is a major portion of this is looking at some more dedicated bus lanes through that corridor. I'd have to work with WashDOT to get what that longer-term timeline is for the bridge in that location. We are working with them closely related to their construction in the 520 corridor, and that mostly pertains to the fact that they've committed to maintaining the capacity that exists there today throughout the duration of construction, except for some nights and weekends that may reduce some of that capacity.
Okay, and when light rail was extended to the University District, there was a policy to leave the service hours in Northeast Seattle. Is that are we going to leave the East Side service hours in the East Side when this kind of change happens?
Yeah. So any of the service hours that we save by connecting our service to the University of Washington Link Light Rail Station will be invested back into the 520 corridor on the east side.
Okay. What happens to the 545 in this scenario?
So we're, as Julie mentioned about the 255, we're looking at a very similar range of options between truncating all of the route or keeping some of it or doing a mix. So we're still looking through the public feedback and kind of developing the different options. So we're going to go through a similar process, as Julie mentioned, for the 255 with the 545 riders. They're very similar markets. They're used to the 1C ride to downtown. So it's going to take a lot of convincing and showing them why it would be a benefit. So we're definitely working towards that come June when we show the concepts.
Okay. Talking about a 1-seat ride. For many people, this would make a 3-seat ride.
Right.
Not it's not a 1-seat ride. It's a 2-seat ride today.
Right.
And so this would make it a 3-seat ride with two friction points. And I'm glad to see that you're focusing very much at the university transfer, because the friction there is going to be amazing unless you do some major things. I haven't heard of any major capital. There may be some very minor capital, but part of in the future, part of the efficiencies that Deputy Mayor Arnold was talking about to make the 255 is on our dime, not on metros or the states. That's called partnership these days. Thank you.
Other questions or comments for our presenters? I guess I have a question. Maybe it's for Kurt and or our presenters. Is one, has our Transportation Commission looped into this information? And then how do we go forward moving, you know, obviously you have some very passionate transit advocates here, regular bus riders. We've got a transportation engineer on our council. We care deeply about advocating for our residents and businesses and service. And we've had some difficult conversations with the transit agencies in the past. So what's your advice to us, or maybe our city manager can help us, but how to move forward in a positive way to get the most creative, innovative solutions to some very serious problems that we are fearing that we're headed up against. So,
just speak to the commission first, and then I'll.
So this same team has been out to the Transportation Commission, I believe it was last month, to present during the first phase of their community involvement, and we have a commitment from them to be back during each additional phase to continue to engage in that conversation and get their feedback from the Transportation Commission. And then staff is also, I'm involved in, there's a technical advisory committee that is made up of city staff that we're also involved in. And not only do we have our transportation commissioners represent that, but one of our former transportation commissioners got appointed to the sounding board. So Tom Pendergrass is on the sounding board as well.
So do you see that our transportation commission will be bringing us ideas about how we can, I mean, they're smart transportation people. It's a two-way street, right? They can give us advice, Mr. Rasher.
We've got two commissioners here, and I'd love to bring them up to the table and get their thoughts as to what they heard last month, and because they've been, this has been ruminating around. If you guys would like to
step up to the table.
Yeah, join us. Please.
There's actually three here.
Three.
I'm sorry.
And we have three chairs. Back.
Please come up.
So while they're coming up, I think the suggestion we were ruminating on and talking with Councilmember Asher is to maybe also have a model similar to the Legislative Steering Committee. That through this process, we actually should have a group of council members who meet with staff where we can then specifically advocate and say, this is a King County Council meeting we need to go to. This is a Sound Transit Board meeting we need to go to. This is a letter we need the City Council to adopt that lays out specific requests based on the feedback that we're getting. So we think we need to maybe create that. So we're going to talk about that later in the at the full council meeting as one possible suggestion to help stay on top of this.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for your tireless work on our behalf on the Transportation Commission. So do you have comments or feedback for us about what you heard before and what you've heard tonight?
I think we heard got a similar presentation, the early work. I think it's really too early to make judgments on what the future holds. There's going to be a lot of additional work. Some of the things that Julie and others referred to, the travel time information to me is going to be a critical piece of information. How long is it going to take a rider complete ride with the transfer to hop on Link, to transfer and hop on Link versus that one seat ride? And I think the picture in 2019 with One Center City is, now, you can talk about the projects and talk about the various aspects of them, but the reality is the travel times on the streets are going to be a lot slower, and that 255 and other east side routes are going to be stuck in traffic even more so than today, and that congestion is pretty severe. So what I've encouraged other commissioners and I would say this to community members at large, that keep an open mind. There will be more information coming out. And it's not just the travel time, it's the reliability of the trip. Right now, the reliability is just not there. In some anecdotal information that I've seen, you know, you can vary 30 minutes from downtown Kirkland to downtown Seattle on the 255 in the peak times. So that scheduled time that may be 50 minutes or 45 minutes, oftentimes it's taken an hour and 15 or even longer. So it's that range is pretty significant. And when you're dealing with commuters that need to get to work at a certain time, that is unacceptable. So the reliability issue will not go away completely with the transfer to Link, but it will significantly improve that range of travel times will get narrower. So set of information to look at and deal with. I think a lot of the points that you brought up about congestion in the triangle, that I think a lot of those were brought up at the commission. So Lisa, anything to add?
Yeah, other comments? Covered it?
Yeah, I'm Ken Duker. My major concern is that the decision essentially has already been made to terminate these side routes. But we have not really any assurance that it's going to be workable in terms of handling that many buses from Northeast Seattle and the East Side. In terms of the existing stops won't work. They've got to come up with solutions for more bus bays. And it's just, we don't have the assurance that it's a workable solution.
So a lot of work to be done. Okay, so we'll revisit this later in our meeting to create a task force. Mr. Asher?
I'm just wondering when in the planning horizon the next transit tunnel is programmed. Surface operation, this is not going to work.
Sir, the next tunnel through downtown, the one that would connect, help with Ballard and West Seattle.
Mm-hmm. No, that would get transit back flowing north and south through the town. That's not already going to be plugged up with a rail system.
I'm confused by your question.
No, you haven't planned for it. It is what the question is. We surface streets are not going to work over the long term for this, and I just don't see how we're going to go without having another transit tunnel in downtown Seattle.
You're saying a third one.
Thank you.
You mean a third one? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have deep concerns, and we're going to be looking forward to working with you more. Thank you, Julie, Juan, Alex, and Paul, for being here. We appreciate it very much. And we will be talking to you again very soon, I think. Thank you very much to Transportation Commission members for being here tonight.
Thanks, appreciate it.
So we are going into an executive session to discuss pending litigation, and we expect to reconvene our meeting at approximately 7:30. Thank you.
Thank you. We're live, man. Perfect timing.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. We are back in session following a study session in which we had an update on the SR 520 transit route restructure, a lot of changes there, as well as an executive session to discuss pending litigation. Councilmember Marchione will not be able to attend tonight's meeting. Therefore, before asking Ms. Anderson to call the roll, I'm wondering if there's a motion to excuse her.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet to excuse the absence of Ms. Marchione's at this evening's meeting. Any discussion? Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. Thank you very much. Her absence is excused. Now, Ms. Anderson, the roll, please.
Councilmember Nixon.
Here.
Councilmember Pascal.
Here.
Councilmember Asher.
Here.
Councilmember Sweet.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Wallen.
Here. Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda is under honors and proclamations. It's the Kirkland Off-Leash Dog Group, or K-Dog, proclamation. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council, members of the audience. So, as you know, the Kirkland Dog Off-Leash Group did an extraordinary job of creating an off-leash dog area for the city of Kirkland over 6 years ago, an extraordinary job of getting it created, getting it built. It's beautiful, and then they managed it for 5 years. Did an extraordinary job with that, for which we're all very grateful, because I use it myself. And the council, when they last adopted the ordinance that would take over the park, you wanted to honor the extraordinary work by this group with a proclamation tonight. So tonight we have some members of the group here, and the council is going to celebrate their incredible achievement, and we're going to look forward to a great partnership with them moving forward into the future.
Absolutely. And Councilmember Pascal is the chair of the Council's Public Works, Parks, and Human Services Committee, and he will be reading the proclamation with me.
All right, so I'm going to read the proclamation honoring Kirkland Dog Off-Leash Group. Whereas the Kirkland Dog Off-Leash Group, known as K-Dog, was formed as a nonprofit organization to promote the creation of safe and legal places for dogs to exercise and play off-leash in Kirkland. And whereas K-Dog, through the passion, energy, and persistence of its community volunteers, worked to create Jasper's Dog Park, Kirkland's first off-leash dog park. And whereas K-Dog has diligently maintained Jasper's Dog Park since its opening in 2012 and has faithfully upheld its commitment to the City of Kirkland over the past 5 years to raise the funds and organize the volunteers necessary to operate and maintain this vital community resource. And whereas Jasper's Dog Park has and continues to offer a wealth of benefits to the Kirkland community, including allowing dogs to safely exercise and play off leash, supporting responsible dog ownership, providing opportunities for dog owners to socialize, and making for a better community by promoting public health, wellness, and safety. Now, therefore, Amy Wallen, Mayor of Kirkland, does hereby proclaim that the City of Kirkland does hereby honor and express its gratitude to the volunteers of the Kirkland Dog Off-Leash Group for their work in developing and maintaining Jasper's Dog Park and creating a lasting legacy for the Kirkland community. Say a few words.
These people created a dog park out of nothing. I mean, and it was blood, sweat, and tears, and we needed it, and you just stepped up and did it for us. So we really want to thank you.
We're very grateful for the partnership that we've had with the City of Kirkland, the Parks Department. They've been really great partners during this adventure, and we're very grateful for the support of the people that are standing up here with me who, as you say, helped to carve a dog park out of a sea of blackberries so many years ago, over many months.
Thank you very much for your service to Kirkland. So the next item, the dog park is a stunning community accomplishment. It really is. There's a need for off-leash dog areas, and this community group was able to do something absolutely amazing and inspiring. It's partly we love Kirkland, and that's one of the reasons, because people do things like that. So we really appreciate you, K-Dog. The next item on our agenda is under communications. The first item is under announcements, and I'm announcing that we're going to have an abbreviated agenda tonight because Councilmember Sweet is celebrating her 30th wedding anniversary tonight with State Representative Larry Springer. And they have some celebrations to be done tonight, so we're going to move right along with this agenda. The next item is under communications. It's item 6B. It's items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for a public hearing. We have no public hearing scheduled this evening. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than three people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, we would hear from three proponents and three opponents on any given topic. So the next, I have a sign-in sheet, and the first group to have signed in, I believe, are the Green Roof Initiative and the Rain Garden Initiative. Do you want to come up together, or Green Roof, and then, okay, let's hear from the Green Roof Initiative. Welcome. Thank you for being here tonight. And if you guys would just state your name for our records, please.
I'm Daniel Trifinescu.
I'm Sia Gained.
I'm Lisa Leonova.
Welcome. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Hello. We are sixth graders from the International Community School in Kirkland. We are representatives of the Green Roofs Initiative. In our science class, we are doing an impact project, and we are assigned to do green roofs. We have decided to make a design for a green roof that will hopefully become a green roof in spread awareness about stormwater pollution and solutions. We are here to share a thought about green roofs. We made a design of a green roof that we wanted to be in Kirkland. And we will be taking questions at the end.
Our intended impact is to have more green roofs in the Seattle area. Right now, there are only 5, which isn't that much. We also want to spread awareness about green roofs and how they help. Not many people know a lot about green roofs and don't know that there is a purpose for them. To help that, we made a website and a petition, and our goal is 500 signatures.
First, green roofs reduce stormwater runoff because they have a pervious surface, so it filters pollutants out of the stormwater. They also reduce ambient temperature because plants absorb 50% sunlight and reflect 30%, which overall makes a 33 degrees Celsius reduction. It filters pollutants and carbon dioxide out of the air, too. Third, it increases agriculture space and creates natural habitats. It creates a fire-resisting layer because of the amount of moisture the plants have.
These are the layers of a green roof. The first layer is the plants growing on the green roof. The second layer is the soil. The third layer is the filter fabric that filters all the pollutants out of the stormwater. The fourth layer is the drainage layer, which stores the water for the plants. The fifth layer is isolation or root barrier. The root barriers prevent roots from damaging buildings or constructions. The sixth layer is the waterproof membrane, which resists soil bacteria and fungi. The last layer is the roof protection, which protects the roof from the green roof.
The plants. The two most common types of green roofs are grass and sedum roofs. We are deciding to do a sedum roof. Not only does sedum soak up a lot of stormwater runoff, but they are drought tolerant and require almost no maintenance. Therefore, sedum plant green roofs are the best ones to use. Our green roof design will consist entirely out of sedums, and they are going to be stonecrop, coral carpet, Angelina stonecrop, and Oregon stonecrop. The reason why these are all stonecrops is because they are the best types of sedums. They have a strong tolerance and long-lasting colors because they store moisture in their thick leaves. They can put up with almost anything, including harsh weather conditions. They're also called stonecrops because they don't need a good soil. Other benefits they have are they attract hummingbirds and butterflies, and they're a good ground cover plant. Soil. Even though stonecrop sedums don't need good soil, the recommended soil for them is silt soil. It is in between sand and clay soil, which are both recommended for sedums. The soil is well-drained, easily compacted, and has more moisture than sand soils.
The filter we chose is iCopal Filter Fleece. It is made of high-tenacity polypropylene and provides high tensile properties. It allows water to drain through while filtering out debris and fines from the system.
Drainage. For the drainage, we decided to do a green roof solution molded plastic panel. They are made up of 100% recycled high-density polypropylene, which can hold up to 1.4 gallons per panel. They have enhanced strength, and the squares which the drainage panels are interlocking.
Root barrier. The barrier we chose is a permeable root barrier. They use a mesh screen that helps make water and small roots to pass through. It also prevents damage to structure from large roots. This is a very effective root barrier, and it doesn't prevent the water in the soil from draining properly.
Waterproof membrane. The waterproof membrane we chose is the asphalt-based waterproof membrane. It is made of rubber and waterproof plastic. Some benefits about it are that it is loose-laid and fully bonded.
Roof protection. For our roof protection, we are going to have a moisture mat. It is made from needle-punched fleece. The fleece is made from 100% recycled polyester and polyprene fibers. They are used to protect against mechanical damage and damage during construction. It is also a base under a drainage product. It is helpful because it is easy to install because they come in rolls and as is shown in the picture.
So we thought of having the green roof on the new Juanita High School building that is going to be built. This is a picture of how the new roof is going to look like. The green rectangle represents where we want the green roof to be. It is a good place to have the green roof there because it is flat, so it wouldn't be hard to make a green roof there.
Cost. The cost of a green roof in the U.S. averages out to $15 to $20 per square foot for all types. These costs include all aspects of green roof development, from the waterproofing membrane to soil substrate creation to planting. It isn't going to cost that much since the area where we want to put our plant isn't that large. Also, we're planning on a fundraiser at our school if you approve our design.
So, what can you do to help? You can support us and help Kirkland a happier and healthier community by going to our website and petition, and these are the links.
Okay, so here are our citations and more citations. And so, any questions?
Outstanding. Thank you. Any questions? I think we have a question or a comment for you guys. Mr. Asher, then Mr. Nixon.
We need to get a copy of your presentation mm-hmm. so that we can copy those links and maybe publish them.
Mr. Nixon.
And I also wanted to ask if you're planning on making this presentation to the school board, because they're the ones who actually control what the roof of the high school is going to be. Okay. Think about that. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Next up, we have the Rain Garden Initiative speakers. Please come forward. Welcome. We are glad you're here. Please go ahead whenever you're ready.
Names first.
Oh, yes. And if you could just state your names for our TV audience.
And please use the microphone.
I am Sophia Colliker-Frares.
I'm Cindy Chen.
I'm Emily Slewinski.
I'm Bhavana Hanwali.
I'm Lily Zhou.
Thank you, ladies.
So we are 5 6th grade girls at the International Community School here in Kirkland, and today we want to propose to you an idea of adding a rain garden to Marsh Park here in Kirkland. We hope that this rain garden will reduce the amount of stormwater pollution that enters into the Puget Sound.
So what is stormwater pollution? Stormwater pollution is created by the precipitation that falls from the sky. Pollution is created when runoff moves towards lakes, drains, sewers, etc., and carries the pollutants and chemicals with it. The dirty water creates hazards to the fish and anyone near the waters. Stormwater pollution is huge in the Puget Sound and damages what we call home.
A rain garden is a shallow depression that is planted with deep-rooted native plants and grasses. Rain gardens collect in stormwater from roofs, driveways, or yards, and allows the water to infiltrate into the ground. Rain gardens reduce stormwater runoff by allowing rain to soak into the ground, as opposed to flowing into storm drains and surface waters, which causes erosion, pollution in Puget Sound, flooding, and diminished groundwater. They improve our water quality by filtering runoff and are used to slow, collect, infiltrate, and filter stormwater.
Building a rain garden only costs about $3 to $5 per square foot if you want to do it by yourself. If you use a landscaper to plan and install, it costs about $10 to $15 per square foot or more. Spring and fall are the best times to start your rain garden. They cost less than a regular garden if you use native plants.
So our rain garden design for Marsh Park is a design which consists of tiers of rain gardens, like stairs. The gardens will run from the storm pipe, which we will have to cut a few inches. This way, the stormwater will drain in a tiered fashion, where if one tier overflows, the water will continue to drain down in a stair fashion towards lakes. The gardens will consist of native plants and dirt and soil.
So, a couple other aspects about how they benefit the community. So, rain gardens actually cut down stormwater pollution by 30%. Another thing that they do is they provide localized flood control, and they provide opportunities for the community to get together and create something. Also, they are very aesthetically pleasing to the eye.
So, rain gardens are a chance for the community to get together to take care of something. The people would work together to make the park more environmentally friendly, and this leaves a mark on them. They realize how important it is to protect the environment and make the outside world aware of the impact they can make. Marsh Park is already a very green park, with gardens and open spaces and lots of green. Stormwater is a form of pollution, and a rain garden will help stop the pollution around the lake area. Projects like this help people become aware of their actions, and creating a rain garden is one step toward becoming more environmentally friendly.
Any questions or comments?
Thank you for listening to our presentation.
Well, that was amazing. Thank you very much. Questions or comments for our presenters? Inspiring presentation, ladies. Thank you very much. And I think we will probably send that to Mr. Pascal's committee. Mr. Nixon.
Well, that was exactly what I was going to suggest, that we refer it to the Public Works, Parks, and Human Services Committee for consideration.
Council okay with that?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And maybe the Park Board as well?
Yeah, the Park Board.
Yep. Mr. Asher's got a good idea there. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Next on our sign-in sheet is William Jones. Welcome, sir.
Hi.
I've been a longtime resident of Kirkland, and I've noticed that over the years, leaf blowers have become more and more frequent and more and louder and louder. And I just think it's a serious problem for the city. And in my neighborhood, on some days, one leaf blower will start. It won't go on for particularly long, maybe anywhere from 15 minutes to a half an hour, but the sound is deafening. And then as soon as that's done on somebody's yard, another leaf blower comes on. And then after that's done, another one. So on a beautiful spring day when there's sun and you have every reason to be happy with the world, it's ruined by one in a succession of leaf blowers after another. And I know the ordinance the ordinance right now say that nothing before, I think, 8 o'clock in the morning and certain holidays are accepted. That's not enough. It seems like the trend in leaf blowers, the two-stroke kind that are powered by gasoline, is to get louder and louder. I'm being dramatic here. So, but there are alternatives. We have a mow and blow operation that uses battery powered, and they're just as effective for what we need. I can acknowledge that maybe there are some big jobs that really need that, but not the ones that I see most of them. I've seen somebody chasing after a leaf for a good minute with one of these loud leaf blowers. So I think it's time for the city to consider either doing it directly by banning two-stroke, or maybe more gradually by lowering the level at which it's acceptable to have a noisy something noisy. By contrast, lawnmowers now are mostly four-stroke, and they mostly have a muffler. It's a profound difference. That's all I had to say. Is there any study session or something where we can get going? I see a lot of people in the audience nodding in recognition of the problem.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. So at the end of our meeting, we'll discuss this during our calendar update.
Okay. I can't stay to the end of the meeting, but can I follow?
Well, if you could give your contact information to Mr. Triplett or our communications team, we'll get back to you about our conversation. The next item on our... Oh, I'm sorry. So that was the end of the sign-in sheet, but is there anyone else who would like to address the council at this time? If not, I will declare this items from the audience period closed. The next item on our agenda is it's number 7, special presentations, the Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT, graduation. Number 23, City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So we got to celebrate one extraordinary group of volunteers with KDOC, and now we get to honor another group of volunteers that, by my calculation, put in 182 dog hours of training for emergency management, 26 hours total. So here to describe what they went through and then give them their graduation papers, which will come from you, is our Deputy Fire Chief, Helen Aarons-Byington.
Madam Mayor, council members, and community members, it's my honor tonight to introduce to you the newest members to complete the Community Emergency Response Training, CERT. In a time when everyone is busy, when there are many tasks that need our attending, when the to-do list never ends, tonight we are recognizing 27 people who committed not only to learn how to become prepared in case of a disaster, they did. They became prepared. They not only learned how to help themselves and their families, but they learned how to help the community during a disaster. They invested 26 hours of training. They completed a lifelike drill at the end of the training, and now they are CERT graduates. I also want to acknowledge the Kirkland Seventh-day Adventist Church for allowing us to use their facility for the class. It was a great partnership with them, and we've had several classes there, so I wanted to acknowledge them. And I challenge these graduates not to let it stand here. Share the information, encourage others to take the class, and get involved with your neighborhood CERT team. And to everyone else here tonight and listening, I challenge you to do something tomorrow to become better prepared. Even if you can't take the 26-hour class right now, you can put extra food and water in your car. You can buy a few extra gallons of water and leave it in your house for emergencies. Make sure heavy items are secured in your house so they don't fall on you. So simple things, but do something. Because if you think it's hard to get prepared, try explaining why you didn't. Christina Brugman is one of the volunteers, and she's going to come up and help read the names. We're going to give them certificates, and we'll have them come around to you guys. Okay.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Charlotte Bennett. Jeanette Cunningham from Juanita. Charlotte's from Totem Lake. Michelle Currier from Norkirk. Tanya Elder, Juanita. Jenny Fittimore from South Rose Hill. Wendy Harm, Juanita. Thank you very much. Jason Hernandez, Totem Lake. Brian Hudson, Norkirk. Chris Karamatis, Houghton. Catherine Lohr from Norkirk. Michelle Lustgarten, Juanita. Kristen Lynch, Juanita. John Nesbitt from Snohomish.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate your service.
Emily Sorensen, Bridal Trails. James Sullivan, Norkirk.
Thank you.
Betty Jo and Phil Torres from Highlands. James Trott, Snohomish. Denise Wells, Norkirk.
You're going to have to come down from Snohomish.
And Jason Wetzel, Boston.
Thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Charlie. Thanks very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We really appreciate taking the time to clarify. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Congratulations.
Thank you for your service.
Congratulations. Now, how did you get the orange?
Thanks for taking the time to clarify. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your service. No. We're not going to do that.
Thank you for your time. We'll take a quick photo and then move out.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for your service to your community.
And nearby communities.
And nearby communities, yes. To our whole region, really.
Thank you, Christina.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I would ask Deputy Mayor Arnold, who's on the Finance and Administration Committee, for an audit of the accounts.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We had payroll in the amount of $3,190,931.62 and bills in the amount of $4,679,808.79.
Thank you. Mr. Usher.
Madam Mayor, I move first and final reading of the consent calendar.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to approve the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? There are ordinances, so if we could have the roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Walling?
Yes. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is under unfinished business. It's the 2017 State Legislative Update number 8. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. So because not a lot has happened, we allowed Lori McKay to actually take this night off, so I'm giving the presentation on her behalf. She put together two quick slides, and I have a short update. So also ably assisted by Deputy City Manager Tracy. get the first slide. So just a couple quick dates to remind you. The governor convened a special session on April 24th. The last day for that special session is May 23rd. And June 30th is when the 2015-2017 budget expires. So the two houses need to figure out and pass a budget before June 30th. They may need a second special session. We'll see how that goes. What we're hearing so far is that not a lot of progress has been made, but they're down there and they are talking. So we all wait. So next slide, please. Just remind you of our state legislative priorities and their current status. It's important to remember that even though the main focus of the executive of the extended legislative session is the budget, they can still act on policy bills. So some of these things can still be revived, and others that are waiting to pass will probably come in at the very end. But the three in green are our priorities that have been sent to the governor for a signature, and I think hopefully you saw an email from Lori McKay saying that there is a tentative signature for the Public Records Act ones on May 16th, and if anyone would like to go down for the signing ceremony, we'll be arranging a van or a chance to take you all down. So if you do want to go, please let Lori McKay know. And I believe I only have one more slide, and I think that slide is...
Don't forget the MPD bill on Friday.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss it? Yes. Thank you. And last question is just, do you have any questions or any comments that Councilor Asher or others want to make about the session?
It's a very quick update.
We have a council member will be in consultation with leadership later on this evening. Yes.
Good ask, though.
Yeah.
Are you going down Friday?
So we will keep you posted if anything breaks. I'll go with you. And thank you to Lori for her hard work. Thank you, Tracy, for your help.
Okay.
And that's all I have on that topic.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Mayor,
yes,
I would also mention I plan to be there on the 16th for the bill signing for 1594 and 1595. There is a Sunshine Committee meeting that day, so I was going to be down there anyway. So it was good for the governor to schedule it when I was already going to be there.
Cool. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is 10B. It's resolution 5254 relating to the adoption of an action plan for 2017 through 2019 to guide the city's participation in the evolution of Totem Lake. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, as you know, we're taking lots of actions related in and around Totem Lake in various things, like the comprehensive plan, like our city work program and so forth, and we thought it was important to try to put all those in one place so they're much easier to follow. And this resolution, if adopted by the council, asks us to come back to you with a second version of the Totem Lake Action Plan that would outline timelines and action. So here to just walk you through that very quickly is our planning director, Eric Shields.
Hello. Good evening. Yes, so our recommendation this evening is to adopt the resolution that's in your packet. It would approve, it would direct staff to develop an action plan for the 2017 and 2019 and return to the council for adoption in September with that plan. Totem Lake is Kirkland's only urban center, accommodating a majority of the planned residential and commercial growth. It's important to coordinate the city work to provide a sense of place and neighborhood atmosphere together with accommodating density. And stakeholder participation is also very important. We've had the Totem Lake conversations, which are ongoing, Totem Lake symposium, quarterly bulletins, and other communications. Major elements of the action plan would focus on capital projects, supporting goals of economic development, balanced transportation, park and open space development, partnering with Sound Transit and King County Metro to ensure great transit service for Totem Lake, implementing the CKC master plan, for example, with the Totem Lake connector and the South Kirkland Park and Ride. That's really probably the Kingsgate Park and Ride, I think that should be referring to. 2016 symposium recommendations about creating a sense of place, improving connectivity, provide zoning flexibility and wayfinding plan. Furthermore, the Planning and Economic Development Committee is recommending wayfinding development incentives review jobs housing balance, and encourage more commercial development if necessary. Finally, recently we've begun, Councilmember Arnold in particular, and I believe Mayor Wallen has also been working a little bit with PSRC on the whole question of the regional centers, update of their criteria, and we would focus on that as well to make sure that Totem Lake is included in that. So the next steps, we would work with departments to develop the work plan, categorizing works according to short, medium, long-term actions, continue to publish quarterly reports on sales tax and employment growth, status of work items, and then return to the council in September with an action plan for adoption. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Shields? Mr. Asher?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The initiatives that we've got going, I think, are going to do what we need to get done. Having an action plan is, I think, a worthy focus of this. My concern is in Section 5 of the Be It Resolved. It's on E-page 222, I think it is. And I would propose an amendment to that Section 5 to word it, the capital improvement program prioritizes, instead of shall prioritize, prioritizes funding for public facilities that support the urban center. Because we're not talking about reprioritizing the capital improvement program that we have adopted already.
Second.
So do we have to have the main motion before us?
Oh,
first?
We could do that first.
Could
that's
we?
True.
Do you think?
Would you like me to do that?
Yeah, why not?
Can I do that? Let's move.
I move that we, Madam Mayor, I move that we approve resolution. Got to scroll way up to find the number.
5254.
Resolution 5254.
Yeah.
Second.
Okay. It was moved by Councilmember Nixon, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve resolution 5254 relating to the adoption of an action plan for Totem Lake. And
Madam Mayor, I would
thank you.
Move to amend Section 5 on page E-222, the first part of the sentence should be changed to read, the capital improvements program prioritizes funding for public facilities that support the urban center, yada, yada, yada.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Nixon to amend Resolution 5254 on Section 5, page 222, so that it reads, the capital improvement plan prioritizes funding for public facilities that support the urban center. Is there any discussion of that amendment? Mr. Nixon.
Well, it's interesting that you just said capital improvement plan. What is the actual name of the document?
Oh, because there's an S in there, yes.
It's capital improvements program.
Is it program or plan?
It's program.
Program.
It is?
Program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Capital improvements program.
We call it plan all the time. Okay.
Okay, so it should read.
Should the S be there or not?
Hold, please. We're looking that up.
Okay.
Oh, good question.
I was only going for one change.
That's it.
One change.
What page is it?
222.
Page 222. Line 104 and 105.
Yes.
Capital Improvement Program.
Singular.
So no S.
Okay. Madam Mayor, I would amend my amendment so that the reading of Section 5 should be the Capital Improvement Program prioritizes funding for public facilities, et cetera, et cetera.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Nixon to do what Mr. Asher said. Is there any discussion? Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. And then that amends your
So we have to vote on the next amendment, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, we'll go back up the tree. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Nixon to amend Section 5, page 222, so that the capital improvement
program
prioritizes funding for public facilities that support the urban center. Is there any discussion? Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. Excellent. Thank you. That is approved. Now the question is on the main motion. It was moved by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve Resolution 5254.
Just one.
Yes, sir.
One comment. On the action plan, I hope when we bring it back that there is some contemporaneous input provided for by the community. This doesn't provide for any kind of outreach, and they deserve that. I wouldn't amend any section of it. Just
we'll make sure we
give that direction,
incorporate that into
the
action plan.
That's the way we do it.
Absolutely.
Yep, that's how we do it. Absolutely. Mr. Arnold.
I'm excited about pursuing this plan. Given the dramatic growth we're seeing in Totem Lake, it's great that we're looking at ways to get ahead of it. We've got a lot in the pipeline, and this will help us look at what things we can do before the ribbon cutting actually start to happen.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments? All right. The question is on the motion to approve Resolution 5254 as amended relating to the adoption of an action plan for Totem Lake for 2017 to 19. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. Thank you. Resolution 5254 is approved. It is hard to underemphasize, or I don't want to use double negatives. It's very important that we do this. There's so much happening, and it's if we don't do it right, it'll stick with us. So I'm glad that we're focusing on it. So thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is also under unfinished business. It's 10C, award construction for Juanita Drive Quick Wins Projects. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So we are looking for awarding a construction contract, but also for a budget increase to this project. So we wanted to have a chance to update you and explain it to you. So Aparna Connell, our project engineer, is going to make a presentation and looking for direction from the council.
Thank you, City Manager. Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. I have a few slides here on Juanita Drive Quick Wins Project that will go along with the memo packet that we had for today's meeting. So over those slides, I will have the improvements, the anticipated schedule, budget, and the recommendation to City Council to award the contract to Road Construction Northwest and approve budget increase. For the improvements, this Juanita Drive Quick Wins Project is 4 mile long corridor project that improves bicycle safety, pedestrian safety, and other improvements like environmental enhancement, gateway signs, lightning upgrade, rapid flashing beacon on various locations within that 4 mile corridor. This project, combined with lakefront pedestrian and bicycle improvement project that's also going this summer or fall of this year, will complete 8 mile street from Bellevue to Kenmore. The one in blue is Juanita Drive Quick Wins Project, and then the one in green is in design. That's Lakefront Project that goes from Bellevue to 98th Avenue, and then 98th Avenue is the one where we are adding a bicycle lane that completes the bicycle network north to south. There are three rapid flashing cross beacons, crosswalk with RFPs on 143rd Street, 93rd Avenue, and Big Fin Hill Park, where it connects to the King County Trail the RFP will cross the Big Fin Hill at Juanita Drive with the Parks Trail system, east and west. For the schedule, we're here May 2nd. The contractor will start the construction in June, and we have 80 contract days for the project, so the anticipated completion of the project will be mid-October, November, if we get started by beginning of the June. this project is federally funded and state funded project. We have about $1.35 million grant funding, including federal and state money, and initially the project has 60 to 600 city funding. And right now with the contract bid opening and cost, our anticipated expense for this project is $1,963, and the apparent shortfall is $550,400. So additional funding that we're recommending as a part of this presentation and this memo is the surface water funding of $350,400 and impact fees of $250,000, totaling $550,400. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Questions, Mr. Pascal?
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions. Just I haven't heard an update on this for a while, so I just want to make sure that some of the things that I was thinking about are still in this project. One, the centerline rumble strips, is that still part of this?
Yes.
Okay. And then we had talked about where the bicycle lane is going around sharp corners, to putting some type of candlestick or something in the buffer to prevent cars from going into the bike lane, particularly just around the sharp corners. Is that part of this?
Yes. We do have on all the buffer bicycle, we have 2-foot-wide bicycle buffer with what is called thermoplastic. It's almost like a rumble strip, but made of thermoplastic on the traffic side. It's the entire bicycle lane. And on 83rd, where it's a sharp corner, there we do have some candlesticks put in, and we'll look at it, how it works out with the maintenance to do those, and then we'll go from there. If you look at the centerline rumble strip, is the red one, orange, in the map over here. So that's still in the
good plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Yes, please. Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, I'd move to adopt the staff recommendation and authorize the additional funds for the Juanita Drive Quick Wins project.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Pascal, to adopt the staff recommendation and award a construction contract for Juanita Drive Quick Wins with additional funding authorized. Any discussion?
Not here. Mayor.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Pascal.
You know, I guess it always, you know, gets my attention as a council member when the budget's more than what we had assumed. But one of the things that I thought was really good about this project that we didn't really, I think, foresee early on was a widening of the roadway to include a bike lane at 98th, right, mm-hmm. as you approach Juanita Drive. And that's, I hear a lot about that from bicyclists, that it's kind of, it's a scary area there, really necks down. And so to be able to do that as part of this project is really going to be a big thing for the community, and also replacing that sidewalk. So that's a really neat thing. And I know that it impacts the wetland and in the shoreline area, so understand why that increases the cost a little bit. The last thing is, you know, I know that we've had some good communications about this project for many years now, but, you know, some people just don't really know what's going on until they start seeing contractors out there, and I really hope that we continue our good communications about what's happening and making sure we get the word out early on as this takes place. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
And just want to point out those elements were well laid out in the memo, and thank you for the briefing. Those are very well put together.
Thank you. Absolutely agree. Thank you. Other comments? Thank you. It was moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Pascal, to approve the staff recommendation to award a construction contract for Juanita Drive Quick Wins with additional funding. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed say no. Thank you very much. That is approved. And a long time coming, and I'm really excited, especially has other people's money in it. It's good.
Mostly. Yeah.
The majority.
That's right. All right, the next item on our agenda is under new business. It's the Human Services Commission interview process. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. As you know, you've established a new Human Services Commission, and we're going to be selecting them, and an interview process is coming up. A week ago, we had about 4 applications, and we made a really big push, particularly on social media, our communications team, and now we actually have 30 adult applicants and 2 youth applicants. So we do need to pick a subcommittee of the council to help whittle those down. I do want to note that our very own Kathy Anderson has applied to be on the Human Services Commission. She has an abiding commitment to this topic. But because of that, she's actually not going to be part of the selection process. That's actually being turned over to Anya Mullen, our deputy clerk. So I just want to make sure everybody's clear on that so there's no apparent conflicts. But she will help you draw the names for picking the subcommittee. So that's the next task.
Absolutely. I think we want Kathy to choose names, don't we?
Sure. The question that I had, though, was that the screening needs to be done by this week?
Sometime in the next week and a half. Preferably over the course of the week so that we can get the recommendation to council at your next meeting.
That's different than the way I read it here.
So that we meet the packet schedule.
Yeah. I'm going to be out of town next week.
Okay.
So it might be tricky if I'm selected. Try not to choose me, Kathy. No pressure.
You won't be able to leave.
Okay, I'll send out the vibes. Okay. Councilmember Marchione.
Oh.
Should be good. Councilmember Sweet. Last chance for the mayor.
She gets out on Thursday.
Go over to her place. Councilmember Nixon.
All right.
Good job, Kathy. Thank you very much.
Are we confident that Councilmember Marchione would be able to do this?
We could probably go to her.
That's what I was
thinking. We could meet at her place, and I'm sure she has access to her laptop and can review all the materials.
I think she would love to do this.
Great.
And she did the last one by phone.
This is her,
too.
Okay. This is right in her wheelhouse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Madam Mayor, I'd be willing to serve as an alternate in the case that Councilmember Marchione is not able to serve.
Excellent. That's a great idea. Thank you. All right. So you don't need any action from us. That is done. Okay. So we're moving right along then to council reports. Mr. Nixon.
Yeah. So just a couple of things happened in the last couple of weeks. We had our volunteer appreciation dinner, which was very well organized and moved right along, which was great. And I especially wanted to acknowledge Patrick Tuft and his work in pulling that together and everybody else who was involved as well. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, just last Saturday, we had the celebration of the opening of Joston Park in North Juanita. And that was a great event as well. The Parks Department, the Green Kirkland Partnership, all the volunteers, and it turned out to be a family reunion of sorts for the Joston family. Many of them hadn't met each other until this event, so that was great. In terms of things upcoming, just a reminder, if you've signed up for it, that the SCA, the Sound Cities Association Networking Dinner, is tomorrow, and the next Public Issues Committee meeting is coming up on May 10th. I forwarded the draft agenda to you, and there's, once again, not a whole lot on it, just a couple of topics. So if you have opinions on any of the discussion topics that you'd like me to take with me, I'd be happy to do that. That's all.
Thank you. Mr. Pascal.
So the Public Works, Parks, and Human Services Committee meets tomorrow, so don't have any updates on that, but only a couple things for me. I attended the Friends of Big Fin Hill Park annual meeting on April 19th. Mayor Wallen was there too, and was invited to speak along with Kevin Brown, the King County Parks Director, and our own Michael Kogel from Kirkland Parks. And it was a good showing. I would say probably 60 to 80 people, and conversation about Kirkland taking over Big Fin Hill Park at some point, and we, Michael and I and Kevin, all talked about that and some things to consider about that. And then just other questions about the park and things. So that was a good discussion. And then finally, on April 25th, last week, attended the 100th Avenue Corridor open house, got to see a number of folks that have been participating in the process, and it continues along, and it was good to see the community out and, you know, generally folks supporting where that's at right now. But, you know, some questions about certain property accesses still. So that's it.
Thank you. Mr. Asher?
For the sake of brevity, I'll only bring up one item. The parking closures at Park and Rides. Overlake parking closure began yesterday, and South Bellevue Park parking is closing on the 30th of May for many years. South Kirkland, go early or go home. Because everyone's going to be moving downstream to get to that parking ride.
Thank you, Ms. Sweet.
Okay, just very briefly, I think we all got invited to the Lake Washington School District Community Sustainability Summit on 14 June. Mm-hmm. Anybody going?
I am.
I'm going to try to. So just wanted to make sure everybody got that. I had a Cascade Water Alliance meeting. I think I sent some information out to you about the Water Resiliency Summit that's coming up on June the 9th at Meidenbauer Center. Cascade's putting this event on. It's an earthquake drill, and they have some amazing speakers who are coming in. So if you have any interest in this, I know Helen's been invited to it. The EMAC members from SCA are going to be attending it. They'll seat about 150 people for it. But if you RSVP, they'll buy breakfast. It's going to be a pretty impressive event. And that's all I'm going to tell you.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
Had a couple of things. On Tuesday, April 25th, there was a community conversation with the police chief on our welcoming and inclusive resolution and ordinance, and a number of folks in the audience had questions and some suggestions on best practices from the American Civil Liberties Union. The chief did a fantastic job, and people came out of that meeting feeling very proud and much more comfortable with the state of our city, given the answers that the chief had. Related on that topic, at a separate event this weekend, I ran into an attorney that is working for the city of Seattle on their lawsuit against the federal government's threats against so-called sanctuary cities. And I was wondering if anybody had any objections if I asked the city attorney to follow up and understand what that lawsuit is about. I don't have enough details to be able to tell you, but it may be something of interest to Kirkland.
Yeah, I think there was a federal injunction this week concerning that. It was at a federal court level, I believe. So yeah, that could be instructive.
Sure. Mr. Nixon.
So my question is: Are you inquiring about what the potential impacts of federal government actions might be on Kirkland? Are you talking about inquiring as to whether Kirkland should join the lawsuit?
Not even at the point to ask if Kirkland should join the lawsuit, because I don't even know what they're suing about and would like to gather some more information.
It would be good to get more information, sure.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then finally, I wanted to note that on Thursday, the Growth Management Policy Board is going to start its look on the new regional centers framework. The discussion is going to be on military facilities, SCA caucus is going to meet ahead of time, but give it all the press and the consideration from folks in Pierce County about potentially exploring pulling out of PSRC. I think the position that SEA was going to take is something that finds a solution that is acceptable to Pierce County on how military facilities are handled. Wanted to see if anybody had any feedback as we go forward. Okay.
Okay.
Stay tuned. Thank you.
Some thought. Thank you. I wanted to also add my thanks to everyone who worked hard on the volunteer event, especially Patrick, but it was a really nice event, as it always is. I attended the Evergreen Gala, which raised $1.35 million for Evergreen's Transitional Care Unit for Behavioral Health, which I think is probably a needed investment in our community. And I attended the North End Mayor's meeting today, which is kind of a Sound Cities, but mostly North End Mayor's. Congresswoman Del Benny's office was there. They have launched a mobile caseworker program where they will come to your town and set up in the library and deal with veterans issues, immigration, people with federal home loan problems. So they have asked us if we want them to come, and so I wanted to make us all aware of that program as an opportunity for us. The Sound Cities is hosting, or Claudia Balducci, Councilmember, King County Councilmember Claudia Balducci, our county councilmember, is going to be hosting the Eastside Transportation Forum. I think a few of us are going to that on Friday.
There's a lot of conflicts. I think I'm going to go to the bill signing. Mm-hmm. To the bill signing.
Okay. And
it's not until 1, so the bill signing will be over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's 1:30 to 4:30, something like that.
And then, you probably have all heard that there's an affordable housing task force being put together to talk about the potential for a sales tax increase to build affordable housing in King County in cooperation with the City of Seattle. And Sound Cities is going to be having 4 seats on that. And there was just a lot of discussion about the arts levy is now going ahead, and then that, and then concern about jeopardizing the Veterans and Human Services levy, which is proposed to go from 5 cents per thousand to about 13 cents, and just voter fatigue, Sound Transit angst. So there's what they've asked us to do is just we don't have anything coming up on the ballot, but many cities do, and it'll be just an interesting time coming up. We also had a presentation on Energize Eastside, which is moving along, but you know there's some sort of neighbor conversations about concerns with that project. So, but it was interesting to think about our electrical system grid being built in 1960 and how much has changed since then. So that is all that I have to report to you. The next item on our agenda is our city manager. Oh, you know, what about the our speaker tonight, William Jones?
Normally we do that after the city manager.
We'll do that after the city manager. Okay, we'll do that in calendar update. Right. City manager.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. So a couple quick things. One, at one point, and now some things have changed, we had 5 of you who were going to come see the second graders on Friday. Mm-hmm. So if so, we're going to have to post that. So I just want to see, given the changes, are 5 of you still intending to come? Or maybe show of hands who's going to be here, if you know.
I was going to.
Yeah, I think Penny and I are now going to the bill signing.
Oh, you're going to the bill signing now. So, okay, so we're going to have 3, it looks
I'll
like.
I'll probably bow out and let these 2 gentlemen do that then.
Okay.
It's a busy day.
We can handle second grade.
You have
total confidence.
Okay, great. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we knew on that. Let's see, second question. So some time ago, I had a chance to talk to each of you about something that came out of the work program retreat, which is whether or not we wanted to explore potential options for parking under Peter Kirk Park, which has been a long-time issue in our community. And you asked me to come up with some options, and I was able to talk to some folks who might be able to give us some preliminary concepts and cost estimates of some design concepts for up to about $15,000 or less, which I think would give a conversation starter for the community and also a sense of scale for all of us to see whether this is something the council wants to further pursue. So what I wanted to ask is whether the council would like me to bring back a request for up to $15,000 from the Special Projects Fund at the next council meeting, which is required by your rules. And if so, I'd bring that with a description and a memo as to what we'd be doing.
Why don't we just make a motion now and give you to bring it back?
Okay. You can do that, but I believe you have to suspend your rules in order to do that.
I would move to suspend the rules so that we could consider the city manager's request at tonight's meeting.
It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet to suspend our rules so we can consider this request this evening.
Okay.
Any discussion?
Sorry, just a quick conversation. So I think you actually have to approve a fiscal note with it, which we don't have, so we'll need to bring it to the next council meeting.
That's suspending the rules, too.
Okay.
That's
Contained under suspended rules.
Okay.
Yes.
Then we can.
We're suspending multiple rules.
So that when we do the mid-buy, we could just account for that, maybe.
Yeah. You could bring the fiscal note back to the next meeting as a consent. You could bring the fiscal note back as a consent item.
Consent item. Perfect. That works. That works. Thank you.
Okay. So we have a motion to suspend our rules so we consider the request tonight. Moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet. Will all those in favor say aye?
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. Thank you very much. That's approved. And then?
Madam Mayor, I move that we support the city manager's request for $15,000 for concept and financing outline for parking under Peter Kirk Field.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to support $15,000 for conceptualization, or the beginning of, for parking under Peter Kirk
and
Field.
And it's Lee Johnson Field.
Lee Johnson Field, yes.
Stand correct.
Some of the concepts are also. Yeah, some of the concepts are under the rest of Peter Kirk Park as well. So
it's either park or field,
right,
or both.
Uh-huh. Right. So it's both.
Yeah.
And or Peter Kirk
Park. The vicinity of the Peter Kirk Park.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. So that was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Sweet. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Should the motion mention the source of the funds, the Council Special Projects Fund?
Probably should, to amend it to include.
Can I move to amend the motion to say that the funds would come from the Council Special Projects Fund?
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Nixon, seconded by Councilmember Asher, that the $15,000 come from the Special Projects Fund. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed? Thank you. So now we're back to the main motion, which was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Sweet, as amended. So the $15,000 for conceptualization of parking under in the vicinity of the Peter Kirk Park / Lee Johnson Field area. Will all those in favor please say aye? Oh, excuse me.
Discussion.
Right? Yes, discussion, please.
Just real quick, will that include more than just parking? I mean, like looking at like what happens above the parking area
So the concept would be what would you put it in, what would happen on top. But it'd be very, very preliminary just in terms of the actual
So it's not just parking. I just want to make sure.
Trying to get us a ballpark figure.
Right.
I've been waiting all night for that one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done.
All right. The question is on the motion made by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Sweet. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed. Thank you.
Aren't we efficient?
Thank you all.
Much
Thank you
very
so. Much. Then I just wanted to highlight, now turning to the calendar, that we do have a potential date.
We have a question. Sorry. That was on the main motion.
So first we had a motion to suspend the rules. That was Dave and Penny. Then we had a motion, a main motion, Dave and Penny. And then we had the motion to amend passed. That was moved by Councilmember Nixon, seconded by Councilmember Asher to use the Council Special Projects Reserve as a funding. And then we went back to the main motion as amended, and we approved it. Is everybody good with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It went fast.
Yeah, impressive. It was quick. Okay.
Clock's ticking.
Nicely done. Okay, so that looks like the retreat is likely to be June 15th. The new.
13th.
But they said an alternate date as well.
I think it's
15th. Right. At least that's the news I had this morning. Anyway, what I wanted to let you know is that. That works for most of the topics, but one of the things we're going to do is provide you with a potential CIP update discussion, which was then going to lead into the June 20th study session on the CIP. And so we might end up trying to do that a little bit differently. We may send you some information early, and I might reconfigure that a little bit. So I just wanted to make sure you're aware of that, or we might not use the study session. But so those two topics will be so close together that we'll handle it one way or the other. But I just wanted to make sure you knew we were going to find a way to balance that. So, but.
You're right, it's the 13th.
The 13th, June 13th. Okay, the meeting is June 13th. So. And then to the issue of Mr. Jones that was raised, and his question was whether we want to have a committee look at evaluating different regulations on leaf blowers.
Madam Mayor, I would suggest that we take a look at our noise ordinance. I think that will take care of the problem that Mr. Jones had, that it would be it falls under that. I would be all for banning two-stroke leaf blowers, but I think the noise ordinance in place already takes care of that.
Council members okay with
just
that?
Bring us a report back.
Bring us a report back. Is that okay?
To the full council.
Could you do that?
Yeah, certainly.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, we have a...
Mr. Nixon.
So a couple of quick things. There have been a couple of very robust discussions on Facebook this week on topics that I would like to consider either asking for a staff report on or referring to committee. One is people apparently have been getting a lot of underground utility locator markings in their yards with no – they haven't requested it. They have no idea what it's about. They're kind of freaked out. And so I'm curious about notice requirements when – a utility locator service goes on somebody's private property and marks it up. They're not leaving notes or anything. And so I'd like to see if there are any regulations about that that we're not enforcing, or if we could create regulations that require some kind of notification to property owners when their yard gets painted all up so that they're not wondering if somebody's going to be tearing up their yard. And we could refer that to the Public Works Committee. Would probably be the right place for it to go. Or we could just get a staff report, either one.
What do y'all think?
Staff report, I'll take care of it.
Staff report?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're covered.
Yeah, it could be. I couldn't find anything about it, though. And the other thing that's had a very robust discussion online this week is time limits for on-street parking. And there are actually inconsistencies in the information that the city has on its website about whether it's 24 hours or 72 hours and all these things. And so, again, I would like to either suggest we get a staff report on this subject or refer to the Public Safety Committee, either one. But we need to resolve the confusion on the issue. Yes. Staff report?
Yeah. Staff report.
And to follow up on that, so we have a parking group that meets, it's Public Works and Police and City Manager's Office, and so we can bring that up in that topic and we can reconcile them all and bring back a report to the council.
Thank you. That's all.
Okay, thank you.
And any other calendar items? Okay, that's all I have then, Madam Mayor.
All right, thank you very much. So this is the final item on our agenda. It's number 13. It's items from the audience. This is an additional time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than three people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to three opponents and three proponents may address the council. So this additional items from the audience period will not exceed 15 minutes. Is there anyone in our audience who would like to address the council at this time? Seeing none, I will declare this. Are you sure? Okay. Okay. Last chance. All right. Thank you very much. Items from the audience period is closed, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you.